Hello, and welcome to the Dance Physio Podcast, a podcast designed to explore ideas and foster discussion around dancer health and wellness. We're here to challenge the status quo, bridge the gap between dance science and the studio, and help change the landscape of the dance industry for the better. I'm your host, Erica Mayall, a dancer turned physiotherapist who is deeply passionate about leaving the dance world better than I found it. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Dance Physio Podcast. Thanks so much for joining. Before we get into today's episode, I just want to remind you of a masterclass for teachers that I have coming up. So if you're listening to this episode when it drops, it's going to come out on Tuesday, February 27th, and the masterclass is coming up on Sunday, March 3rd. So if you're listening to this before Sunday, March 3rd, head on over to www.allegroperformance.com/masterclass and register for this free masterclass. It's called NeuroFlex, and it's all about identifying the missing link in your dancer's flexibility and how the nervous system affects our mobility, and what we as teachers can do to identify those missing links and really start working on the nervous system aspect of flexibility. So I would love to have you. It's going to be amazing. Again, head to the website for all the information and registration, and I will also link that in the show notes here. All right, now that that's out of the way, we're going to get into today's episode of the podcast. And today I want to talk all about dance competitions. And before we dive into this, I'm just going to sort of clear the air and say that I am in absolutely no way opposed to dance competitions. And I think that they have a lot of really fantastic benefits for dancers. I'm not even going to get into the list of all of them, but there's tons and tons and tons of upsides of participating in dance competitions. But from a physiotherapist or a physical therapy perspective, there's also some issues that we see that are fairly unique to dancers who participate in a lot of competitions. So we don't see these same issues to the same degree in dancers who are primarily in programs that are just like vocational training programs or more concert dance programs and things like that. So I just want to touch on some of the maybe downsides, we'll call them, that we see of competitions. But before anybody comes after me, I just want to make it really, really abundantly clear that I am in no way saying that dancers should not participate in competitions. This is just food for thought and things to consider if you or your dancers are participating in competitions, because there's things that we can do to mitigate some of these downsides. And so the more we're aware of them, the more we can work to kind of eliminate these so that dancers can continue to participate in competitions for all the benefits that they do provide without some of these kind of downsides that crop up. So we're going to start off by looking at the probably biggest one that I see in terms of dancers coming into the clinic who do participate in a lot of dance competitions. And this often, I would say, affects dancers who are doing a lot of solos, maybe a little bit more so than dancers who are only participating in group competition pieces. But we do see it in group competitions too. And this first one on my list of sort of downsides to competitions is muscle imbalances that we see develop. And there's a good reason for this. Obviously, if we have a dancer who's participating in a competition, the choreography is going to be set to highlight their strongest elements. And so a lot of times it's their sort of strong side, or quote unquote their good side. So we might have one leg that's the better, more flexible kind of like kicking leg, or the side that's the stronger turning side. And understandably, we are going to choreograph to that dancer's strengths. No teacher, no choreographer is going to put a dancer on stage where we're sort of highlighting or trying to show off their weaker side. And so I 100% understand why this happens and where this is coming from. But from a purely physical perspective, this creates a lot of issues within the body. So we see a lot of imbalances that develop. And so if we do have one leg, we'll just use turning maybe as an example, that is our stronger turning leg. So that's the side that's like our stronger support leg. we often see increased muscle development, sort of like a more strength through that side than we do on the other side. So we might have stronger muscles on a supporting leg, and that could be back muscles, core muscles, glutes, all sorts of things. And then we might have the side that's the more, let's say flexible side, or the side that's always sort of like doing the kicks or doing leaps or things like that. And that side will often end up seeing that increase in flexibility. So as we continue to rehearse those dances and continue to perform these skills, you know, week after week or even year after year, if we have dancers who are participating in a lot of competitions every single year, these discrepancies from side to side tend to become even bigger. And again, it's completely understandable why this happens, but we just need to be super aware of it in dancers who are participating in a lot of competitions, and making sure that maybe we're making them practice these skills on the other side in class more often, or just doing things to kind of mitigate these imbalances that develop in through there. We do see this in group dances as well, and sometimes this benefits certain dancers. There's a lot of dancers who, I would say the majority of dancers, let's say, turn to the right. That's kind of most dancers' strong side turning, but it's a bit of a disadvantage for dancers who are natural turners to the left. So what we'll see is the dancers who are natural right turners might develop some of these imbalances because that's already the side they're better at. And then they, you know, that's being choreographed into their dances. And so that's just going to continue to perpetuate itself. But dancers who might be more natural left turners, if their choreography is forcing them to turn to the right, that actually might help to even some things out, especially if they have solos where maybe things are being highlighted on the other side, and then in a group dance, they're being forced to go the other direction. So again, there's no like right or wrong here. It's just something to think about. And especially if you are a choreographer and you're choreographing group dances, definitely keep that in mind, that sometimes we actually maybe want to, in a group dance especially, put things on the, you know, sort of less popular side, because it will help to even out some of your dancers who are naturally stronger on one side versus the other. And then it also gives the dancers who maybe don't actually often get a chance to highlight their stronger side in a group piece, just kind of evens things out a little bit. But again, we do see a lot of these imbalances develop in competition dancers where there's so much emphasis on sort of the, yeah, quote unquote, good side in through there. So that's number one. Probably the biggest thing that I see in the clinic is these imbalances. And like I said, we see these much more commonly in a competition dancer than we see in sort of a vocational dancer or a concert dancer or other types of dance styles. This leads me to point number two, and probably like why this is so prevalent, is in dancers who participate in competitions, we have really, really high levels of repetition through rehearsals. And so we will often have dancers who are rehearsing the same dance from, you know, late fall, maybe even early fall, all the way through to like the end of competition season, which in North America and like where I am in Vancouver often runs until kind of like the end of May. So we have dancers who are performing these same dances over and over and over and over and over again. And so this can lead to overuse injuries when it's like the same, you know, let's say 10 moves in a dance. Obviously, there's way more moves than that. But when we have the same moves happening in a dance over and over again, and we're rehearsing it repetitively, we do see a lot of repetitive overuse injuries that happen on top of these imbalances that I just mentioned before. The other thing that I notice a lot in competition dancers, and this happens closer to competition time, so maybe not so much in the beginning of the year when they're sort of setting choreography and, you know, you're still getting back into dance and the way the year's set up, but as you get closer and closer to competition, there's more emphasis being placed on running the dance or just kind of drilling the dance and cleaning it and really focusing on that. And that's maybe often at the expense of technique classes that would be in the schedule. So it's not uncommon for teachers to realize, oh my goodness, our first competition is in 2 weeks and it's not as clean as I want, or it's not as sharp as I want, or what have you. And so they end up like sort of practicing those dancers more often than maybe sort of focusing on technique, or, you know, in a class where at the beginning of the year, maybe you're spending half the class doing a really thorough warm-up and then focusing on some technique fundamentals, and then the second half of the class practicing the dance towards competition season, what ends up happening is it's like, okay, quick 5-minute warm-up, and now let's just get straight into the dance. So we lose some of these technique foundations throughout the year as we start to get closer to competitions and focus more on those competitions. And again, this can like lead to some of these overuse injuries that we see that typically in a technique class, we're more likely to be performing things on like both sides of the body. And there's maybe like a bigger repertoire of different steps and elements and like technique that you're practicing versus in the dance where it's set choreography and it's the same moves for those 3 minutes or whatever they happen to be. So repetition, especially from rehearsals, definitely is a bit of a issue with competition dancers, and especially the closer we get to competition. So as teachers, we need to be really aware of, okay, how much of our week or how many, you know, what percentage of classes that dancers are participating in, are we just rehearsing dances versus are we still making sure that dancers are getting technique classes and proper warm-ups and that type of thing? And so really trying to keep our schedule as balanced as possible, even leading into that sort of like heavier competition season. Another issue that we see in terms of sort of injuries and like from a physical therapy sort of standpoint is competition schedules can be like fairly problematic. And this is becoming more and more of a thing. Like, I don't remember this being such an issue even 5 years ago, maybe, but this season especially, but over the last few seasons, there's been this trend for competitions to be starting like really early in the morning and then running super late into the evening. And I think this is partly a result of just increased popularity of competitions and then scheduling. Like, it's hard to book venues, and so competitions have the venues booked for say 3 days or 5 days or whatever they have. So they're trying to cram as many dancers as they can into those days. There's lots more we could talk about, you know, based on like the ethics of that and things like that. But in reality, what's happening now is we have dancers that are competing as early. I have dancers personally, I know this year, who've competed as early as 7 in the morning. And I've heard stories of competitions starting as early as 6 in the morning. I personally don't know anyone who's had to compete that early. But even 7 in the morning, if you think, okay, then you need to have hair and makeup done, costumes on, warm up, all of that, like by say 6 in the morning, you're getting up at, I don't know, 5 or who knows what hour you're getting up. These competitions are starting really, really early. And then award sessions are often going really late into the evening. So it's not uncommon for dancers to still be at the awards at 11 at night, let's say, and then having to be up the next day to compete again at, you know, 7 a.m. or whatever these hours might be. This is super problematic because we are not allowing our dancers enough time to get adequate rest and recovery. And then we're expecting them to do this multiple days in a row. Just the way competition schedules work out is it's often like really intense for a few days because that competition may only run for 3 days or 5 days or what have you. So this is definitely problematic. This is less of an issue in sort of the festival circuit competitions. And so here in BC, we have the performing arts festivals and they run over a much longer period of time. So a dancer might, you know, just have one dance that they're competing, you know, 1 week, and then 2 weeks later, they might have another dance from like another style of dance or that sort of thing. So they're spread out over long periods of time. So we tend not to see those extreme time ranges. But in the competitions that more run over like the course of a weekend, and sometimes they're attached to conventions and things like that, we're seeing a lot of these like really, I personally think, unreasonable hours that we're expecting dancers to dance, like to be on the stage that early and then be there that late. And, you know, these dancers are kids and or adolescents, and sleep is really, really important for them. And it's so important from a recovery standpoint, but also just for them to be able to perform at their best. And so to expect them to be doing these super long days, I think is maybe a little bit unreasonable. And we're definitely seeing the consequences of that when it comes to like injury rates and that type of thing. So yeah, competition schedules just with like the fatigue and the lack of recovery can definitely be really problematic. Another thing that I see in the competition world that definitely leads to an increased risk of injury in dancers is often an emphasis on sort of skills, or a lot of times people will call them tricks, but it doesn't even have to be tricks. I think when we talk about tricks, we think of things that are maybe more, a little bit more acrobatic. So it'd be like, you know, flips and handsprings and things like that. But even just skills that aren't tricks, that are potentially beyond a dancer's technical capability. And so we often see in the dance world, and you know, this could be an entire debate all on its own, but when we look at like adjudication and what's being rewarded in the dance world, it does often appear that, you know, sort of like the really impressive skills or tricks are often rewarded at a higher level than maybe some of the more nuanced artistry and things like that. And so what happens is dancers and choreographers and teachers see that and think, okay, well, I need to be able to throw in, you know, triple or quadruple turns and an aerial into like a split on the floor, all these just like really, really phenomenal high level skills into a dance in order to be able to win, or in order to be able to sort of like compete at that level. And so what we end up seeing is dancers are sort of trying to learn or perform these skills that are beyond what their technical capability is. And this is definitely, definitely a huge risk factor for injuries. So it's just something that we really need to be aware of, either like as a dance teacher or even like as a parent, and sort of really trusting the dance teachers that, like, if your child's dance, and especially solos and stuff, maybe don't have all of the fanciest tricks and things like that in them, that's probably because that dancer is maybe not quite ready for those yet. And that's probably a good thing. And I think if you talk to a lot of adjudicators, you will hear them say, like, they'd way rather see a kid do a super, super clean single pirouette than a kind of messy or maybe not super clean, like double or triple turn. So, you know, it is hard, and I think it's always hard for dancers when they see that certain tricks maybe appear to be rewarded on stage, but I think we need to not get sucked into that and really come back to like the why of competition. Like, what's the purpose of why we're doing these? Are we doing them just to like expand our own artistic horizons? Are we doing it to try and challenge ourselves, step out of our comfort zone, all of those reasons, versus like doing it to try to like quote unquote win, or, you know, be the best? Because really, that's probably not the most valuable aspect of doing a dance competition. And so we want dancers to be able to use it to their advantage. And that means staying within like their own sort of technical abilities and really performing those to the best of their ability, as opposed to throwing all of these kind of harder tricks at them, which ultimately may or may not look clean on stage, but oftentimes do lead to increased risk of injury because they're doing things that are just beyond their capability level. And then finally, I'm just going to touch on one more thing, and we'll try and keep this episode not too long. But the other thing that I see in the clinic that's sort of a downfall to the sort of competition dance world is there is often increased pressure on dancers to dance through an injury or perform through pain when it comes to competitions. And I think there's a sense of not wanting to like let the team down or not wanting to miss out on this event. And again, this is maybe not as prevalent in dance settings where they're more training-based settings, like a vocational setting where there aren't these like competitions that they're sort of working towards. And obviously, nobody wants to let their team down, but the reality is if we have an injury or we have something going on, it may not be the best option or the safest option to choose to perform. But I think when it comes to competition sort of dance, I often hear dancers coming in saying, well, you know, this started to bother me like a couple weeks ago, but I had a competition, so I just had to push through and do that competition. And now, you know, the injury is worse, or potentially like the rehab from that injury might be longer because of that. And so, again, it's just something to be aware of, that as parents or as teachers, we need to make sure that we're not sort of placing that pressure on dancers. Dancers are often going to place that pressure on themselves anyway, and they're not going to want to miss out on things. There's that sort of like fear of missing out. But we need to, you know, make sure that dancers know that their health and well-being should be the priority. And so if that means that they do need to miss a competition or, you know, modify what they're doing or whatever, whatever that looks like, that's okay. We want to prioritize their health and wellness. And so, you know, as teachers, I know it's stressful if all of a sudden you have a dancer who can't compete. And so you have to reblock choreography or change things out, but that's just kind of part of the industry. And that's, you know, what's that expression? Like, that's show business or whatever. So I think it's a reality that we need to accept and really try and make sure that dancers know that that's okay. And that, you know, it's not a huge inconvenience, because I think a lot of dancers actually do push through injury and sort of perform when maybe they shouldn't be performing because they're scared of what the repercussions of that will be if their teacher, you know, has to reblock things, or like I said, they feel like they're sort of like letting their team down. So again, I think it's just important that dancers know that they're in a safe and supportive environment so that if something comes up and they cannot perform or cannot compete, that, you know, it's not their fault and that things can be done about it. We can reblock the choreography, everybody else, you know, maybe you have understudies for that reason specifically, that there's somebody else who can step into their role. Whatever your solution for that is, we want to make sure that dancers know that their health and well-being is important and that it is okay for them to miss something if they need to. Of course, there's going to be disappointment about that, but we want to make sure that we're also not, you know, feeding into or adding more layers of sort of like guilt or shame or anything like that onto it, so dancers can prioritize their own physical and mental well-being throughout that process. So those are just some of the issues that I see in the clinic just when it comes to dance competitions, and kind of maybe issues that are slightly unique to competition when we compare them to other dancers in different dance settings. Like I said, I am by no means saying that we should not have dancers participate in competitions, because there are obviously so many benefits to them and dancers love competitions. Like, that is one of the reasons lots of dancers dance, is because they have so much fun at these events. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't take place or that your dancer shouldn't be participating, but these are just things to think about when you are approaching competitions. So think about, okay, maybe how many competitions are we going to do in a season, and how can we space them out in a way that it's not like overly intense and dancers are going to be like really like burnt out or, you know, kind of like overtrained going into them. And how do we plan our year to make sure that maybe our choreography is done quite early in the season so that we can maintain a really good balance of technique and then rehearsing dances in class. So it's not just rehearse, 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 rehearse all the time. I will also tell you that dancers tend to perform better when they are not like over rehearsed to the point that they are bored and like tired of that choreography. So it doesn't always serve us well to be like drilling the same dance a million times over. Sometimes that actually has a bit of a negative consequence. So we want to consider that. And then we also want to consider, you know, dancers who are maybe always performing things on a certain side of their body. Maybe in technique classes, we only do those things on the other side to balance them out. Or maybe we challenge a dancer by actually like choreographing something on their quote unquote weaker side so that throughout the course of the season, they can actually correct some of that imbalance and, you know that by the time they get to the competition portion of the season, that skill, whatever it be, turns or kicks or leaps or whatever, actually maybe is good on that side or even better on that side. So these are, like I said, just things to think about, because there's lots of ways we can mitigate some of these risks and still have our dancers participating in competition. I would love to hear your thoughts about this, especially as teachers, because I know that it's like challenging to kind of incorporate all of this stuff and really sort of think about this when the reality of like the competition world is what it is right now. So if you have any thoughts, discussion, anything around this topic, please, please, please let me know. You can reach out to me through social media channels. I am Dance Physio Erica with a K. You can email me. My email address is in the show notes. I am always interested in continuing the conversation. Thank you so much for listening today. If you liked this episode or found it helpful, please feel free to share it with a friend, a colleague, someone else in the dance world who you think would also benefit from it. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.